Well, as much as I'd like to let this piece of music roll a little bit until we get to the part where he talks about the GD Nation, I have no time to waste tonight. You have no time to waste tonight, and my extremely special guest has no time to waste. And for those of you who visit the Republic Trading Group International.com website and or FederalObserver.com, I hope you've taken the time to read, I guess, somewhat of an introductory piece. I took a major foray away from doing any headlines at all today to give you the basis of what is going to be the beginning of a multi-part visitation by a gentleman who I've known for many, 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 many years. His former wife, and only former because she's deceased, was, as I mentioned one night last week, probably one of my earliest fans, an amazing woman who is missed dearly for many, many reasons. Questions to pose to all of you, because they come about, people who call and contact, how do you leave the country? How do you wrap up everything you've got? And where do you go? And what's the safest place to go, et cetera? We're going to talk a little bit about some of that tonight. And we're going to talk with a man who has personally done it. More importantly, I guess I'm going to challenge many of you tonight and ask you how, because the question is posed, I guess, is how you can exit the system. There's only one problem with that. You know, how do you give up your Social Security? How do you, oh, I got to have a driver's license. I got to have this. You know, most of you don't even know what the system is. And you tune into RBN and other networks and you listen to everybody complain and bitch and moan about the system. It's the Fed is the problem. It's Obama that's the problem. You know what? Gentlemen, we're going to spend the better part of an hour talking with tonight, and I'm going to do very little talking. He's going to be doing it. He's going to show you that, you know what? It ain't Obama's fault. It ain't George Bush's fault. You want to make change in your life? Well, it's kind of like Jack Nicholson said in the movie, you can't handle the truth. Well, let's find out how much truth you can handle tonight as I bring my good friend, the town crier, Roger Sales. Welcome to Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz right here on RBN.
My old friend and colleague, Jeff Bennett, and I thank you for the platform.
Well, you know, it's, you know, you and I've talked about this for a lot of years about how can we do this. And, you know, you've approached a good number of different people about bringing some of these truths to the airwaves. And you've had this conversation, or you've attempted to have this conversation with John Stadtmiller. And it's not to dump on John by any stretch of the imagination. Thank you, RBN. We're going to keep on rolling through. And it's not that I think that John is not interested. I'm not sure that John or a lot of other broadcasters and or listeners understand what it is you're going to talk about. So without further ado, my friend, I want to step back and turn this program over to you. I'm going to kind of be here and learn along with the audience.
Okay. Well, thanks for again for the opportunity and the platform. I'm honored. I'm privileged. And as you know, this is a goal that I've had for fully about a third of my lifetime, not my adult lifetime, my entire lifetime. My journey started on July the 16th of 1992. And I can tell you that was specifically that night because I went back and looked it up because there was an event that night that pegged it for me. And that was the night of Bill Clinton's first acceptance speech in Madison Square Garden. Those of you who are political animals and follow that sort of thing will remember that because I had been given a videotape on a friend of mine who may be listening tonight, Jamie, said, told me that income tax was illegal. And I said, well, yeah, sure. And they said, we got a tape. And I said, well, I'll watch it because I'm open-minded. And that night I sat down to watch the tape about 30 minutes before the speech, thinking that the speech would be 20 to 30 minutes long and I'd resume watching it. Well, that speech was over 2 hours long. And I didn't get a chance to watch the rest of it until Saturday morning. And I couldn't wait to get down. That was a Thursday night. I couldn't wait down to get down and get that thing back in, because quite frankly, I was flabbergasted with what I'd seen in the first part. What I saw in the second part, at the end of it, I literally picked my jaw up off the ground and said, if they can screw us this bad without anybody knowing it, what in the hell else is going on that we don't know about? And this was way before the internet became popular. And so I was living in Marietta, Georgia at the time, and I trotted down to the Cobb County Library and started going through the reference section. And when you have some idea what to look for, you can start finding things. So that was kind of my start. And ever since then, shortly thereafter, I crossed paths with two gentlemen that literally, and I mean literally, changed my life with this information that I'm going to impart, and I've been trying to impart for more than 18 years to people. And most of the time I got the tinfoil hat, you're crazy, etc. But I just kept on going because I knew it was true. And it's been a real drive of mine. So this is quite an event for me, okay? It's not that this information hasn't been put out before. And the conclusion I've reached at this stage is that the people weren't ready to hear it, or they weren't ready to listen. And I think that that situation may have changed a bit. So, Jeff, we talked about you giving my pedigree, so to speak, and rather than you do it, I said, why don't you let me do it?
Because absolutely.
I'll bullet point some of this stuff. I don't have any big all these letters behind my name that a lot of people do when they're esteemed guests. In fact, honestly, most of the people I know that have PhD behind their name, I really think it stands for posthole digger. But
it could also stand for BS.
Yes, well, in many cases, it stands for they've been brainwashed and they don't have an open mind anymore. So anyway, I'll give you a little bit about me. My father was an Air Force officer, so I grew up hither and yon. The most exciting part of those years was 1962 to 66 in Anchorage, Alaska. I went to high school up there. And incidentally, in light of current events, I was in the 1964 Alaskan Good Friday earthquake, which was 1 point higher than the recent Japanese quake. And I can tell you personally, it lasted for over 5 minutes. And an earthquake is a horrendous thing to go through. So enough on that. Ended up at school at a great southern university in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, called LSU. After that, I started my first real career job, as I look back and consider it, was I was a smacky mouth radio disc jockey in my hometown of Panama City, Florida. For a few years, until I figured out that there were guys that were hired by record labels to go around and try and bribe guys like me to play their records. And I said, thank you, God, I've found my calling. And I ended up in Atlanta, Georgia for 30 years, working for Mercury Records for 4 years, covering 4.5 states in the Southeast. I worked for ABC Records until they sold their record division. I worked for a very small label called Infinity for 6 months before they went out of business. This was in the last recession depression in 79 and 80, and I will say that I am proud to say one of my real accomplishments in the record business was a band called Spyro Gyra and a song called Morning Dance that many people are familiar with. That was my record. I broke that record for that label.
Wow.
In fact, I have a gold record for it in my household goods if I can ever get them down here. And then I taught about the music industry, broadcasting, and record promotion at the Art Institute of Atlanta for 10 years. Maybe some of my students are listening here this evening, because every time I could get the chance, I tried to teach them about politics and the monetary system. And where Jeff and I met, although I'd met Jeff years before we physically met, because back in about 1994, I was so into all this stuff, I started listening to shortwave radio. If you'll remember William Cooper, the late William Cooper was the one that pioneered programming on shortwave.
Absolutely.
I believe. And I used to listen to this ragtag bunch of clowns out of Phoenix that worked for this company called Viking International Trading, and they'd switch chairs every night, and there were two brothers there named Cedarstrom and this Bennett guy, and then this wild guy with a fantastic accent who many of you are familiar with. So
Robbie Noel.
when I was cleaning out my stuff to move down here, I found actually a reply from Robbie I had written to Viking, and I had a whole portfolio of information with a personal letter signed by Robbie that, unfortunately, Robbie, I threw it away. So I couldn't bring it to Argentina with me. So anyway, my wife died, as Jeff alluded to. I spent a couple of years wondering what to do, and as I had gotten to the point where I was a free man living in a land of slaves who think they're free men, and because I'd always wanted to live in a foreign culture and never had, and wanted to get out of the U.S. because I saw what was coming very clearly, and I put a lot of things together, and a friend of mine, a dear friend, now deceased, from the record business of friends for 35 years, had bought fincas, which are Spanish for farms down here, and kept telling me about this place, and he's got, come on, I'll go with me, get a passport. Heck, I never even had a passport in my life. And so one night I was sitting at home on a Saturday night watching Globe Trekker, which is a program many of you are familiar with on public broadcasting, and that night the program was on Argentina. Wow. And after watching the program, I had him on the phone the next morning, and the rest is kind of history. I made the decision. It took me, honestly, I did a lot of study. Okay, I did a lot of homework before I ever even came down, and I made the decision to move before I even came down to visit. And we'll talk about that that process that I went through here this evening. I will tell you, as I tell all my friends that I speak with regularly back in the U.S., is that I consider the decision that I made to move here the best decision that I've ever made in my adult lifetime. Okay? So, it's been a heck of a trip. I've had high points. I've had low points. We'll cover some of those. I guess the first thing to talk about are the reasons, unless you've got an, if you've got an interjection along here, Jeff, stick your foot in there.
No, we're doing fine. You keep rolling, man. They don't need me tonight. They tuned in to hear you.
Okay, well, I'll tell you some of the things that I considered when I looked at Argentina, because it's a big move, and I really kind of knew that when I left, I probably would never go back. So the first thing I looked at was water. I'm located in a province called Mendoza. It's right next to the Andes. It's far, far away from Buenos Aires. But if you look at a map of Argentina and you find Buenos Aires and trace your finger straight west about 600 miles, you'll find Mendoza Province. Province is like a state back in the U.S. And the capital is Mendoza City. Mendoza is the richest per capita province in the country. And Mendoza City is the richest per capita city in the country. And the reason for that is because this is the heart of Argentina's wine country, and it's fantastic. Mile after mile after mile of all the big players in the world are here. The Rothschilds, all the Napa Valley people are here. All the big European people are here. All of the Australian people are here. And it's huge dollars and a huge part of Argentina, and the wine is absolutely excellent. In fact, one of their big claims to fame now is Malbec, which some of you can have probably sampled from a wine store. The Malbec grapes that were in Europe got hit by a fungus a number of years ago, and it wiped out all the Malbec vines in Europe. So really, Argentina's one of the richest resource of Malbec grapes in the world, I'm told. So anyway, that's just an aside here, and certainly one of the benefits of living here. But the first thing I looked at was water. Our little town, I live in a small town called San Rafael, and there's about 150,000 people. Argentinians tell me it's different from any other city in the entire country because it's separate from about 150 miles from anything else, nearest big city being Mendoza City. And it's kind of grown up in its own little petri dish. It's got affluence because of the agriculture. It's not just wines. They grow a complete line of fruits and stuff. We'll cover that. But the city was founded on two rivers that come out of the Andes that are snow-fed. So you've got a couple of reservoirs up there, and that's what feeds this area with water and makes it habitable, and the area it is, because otherwise this is high desert. It's very much, I'm told, very similar to Tucson, Jeff.
What's your elevation?
Well, we're about 1,500 feet.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you wanted to get an idea, a little better word picture for you, we're on almost the exact same latitude in the southern hemisphere that Ella J, Georgia, and Atlanta are in the northern hemisphere. So the climate is very, very temperate. But it's high desert. The climate is very dry. And it's 9 out of 10 days are sunny. And it's never really too cold, but it does get pretty hot in the daytime in the summer a few days. The difference is this, and where I'm from, mainly in the southeast part of the country, we deal with a lot of humidity. And when you get hot there, you're hot in the sun, and if you go in the shade, you're hot. Here, you're hot in the sun, but if you go in the shade, it's cool. And it makes it a lot different. And here, because of that heat and because of the agricultural emphasis in the country, we have the Latin and South American Spanish tradition of siesta here, which is I'm going to go into a little bit later in more detail, but is a real, I would put it this way, it's a real easy custom to fall into, okay? So about
especially knowing you, you've been out testing that wine very regularly.
Well, I do like to sample the vino. About 1 o'clock every day, they literally the streets roll up and everything's pretty much dead for 4 hours. And 5 or 5:30, everything comes back to life. And it's like being on a double shift at work, I guess. So anyway, the soil here is some of the richest soil in the world. The climate, as I've covered, is absolutely fantastic. I bought a motorcycle a little over a year ago. It's a great place for motorcycles. The agriculture is outstanding. Not only do they have premier grapes, but they grow plums and peaches and all kinds of different apples and this, that, and the other. Argentina, if you look at it on a geographical sense, is a long country. You know, the U.S. is kind of a north and east and west country. Argentina is a north and south country, and therefore it covers many, many different temperate zones. They grow every single product in Argentina except pineapples. Even in the northern part, they grow some bananas, I'm told. And I read somewhere where if you can take Argentina and overlay it over the United States, it would actually hang out on both sides of the coast. So that's how big the country is. It's the eighth largest landmass country in the world, yet it only has a population of about 43 million, and about 13 plus million of them live in one city, Buenos Aires, which people here refer to as BA. So if I refer to BA during these conversations, that's what I meant. A very exciting city, by the way. Probably the most exciting city I've ever been in. I would never want to live there, but I love going down there for 5 to 7 days at a time, and then I pretty much had my fill. The situation on the other things that I thought were very important are that there's very few mortgages here. They have no 30-year mortgages, and they don't have any mortgages past 10 years, and very few people have those. As you drive around, you'll see houses in different stages of building. You'll see big piles of bricks and wood out there, and what they do is they save up enough money until they buy the supplies, and then they use the supplies up, and then they wait till they got enough money to buy some more supplies. And the important part of that is people aren't going to lose their houses. Okay?
You got to listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, because when he talks about no 30, 40-year mortgages, that's what we've been living on. And I hate to sell you this, but this is kind of a culture shock. The administration in Washington, D.C. is very seriously looking into doing away with 30-year mortgages in this country. Maybe that's the reason they're driving home values back to $50,000 a pop. I don't know.
Do you know, Jeff, that there were no 30-year mortgages in the U.S. until the Great Depression, when Fannie Mae and all that stuff were formed? So, you know, everything reverts, right? The one of the most important things, though, and I've done some research on this since I got here, is, you know, Argentina has a historical part of political and financial crises. It's a very interesting country. And in the last big one here that hit, that everybody knows about in 2001, in our little town here, I've been told, when all the banks closed and 1 out of 3 businesses on Main Street went bankrupt, and there was no more money left to circulate, everyone went to the little town plaza in the middle of town, and they all got into a barter mode, and when they ran out of money in bartering, they all wrote IOUs, and everybody paid their IOUs. So the important part of that story is this. They have systems in place to deal with chaotic situations. Okay.
So it reverted to barter. Did Argentina not go through a very similar thing back in the late 80s?
They've been through all kinds of political and financial upheavals, and it's funny that you should say that, because today is a first of a two-day holiday in Argentina. We had one 2 weeks ago on Monday and Tuesday. That was Carnival. The whole continent was evidently off. But this week, Thursday and Friday, and today specifically, is Memorial Day for them, and the memorial is the end of the military junta that was brought down here by Mr. Rockefeller and Mr. Kissinger, enforcing Milton Friedman's School of Economics, the Chicago School of Economics blueprint. And I can tell you from the stories that I've heard down here that over 35,000 people are still missing. Some of the stories I've heard were about where they would take C-130s, of course, provided by our country, and they would take people blindfolded and hands and feet tied, and they'd take them out over the Atlantic to about 15 or 20,000 feet and shove them out the back of the plane. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what I've heard. Okay, it was a very brutal situation, and today is the remembrance of that. So interestingly enough that you should bring that up. So those were the things that at least the crux of my decision. Some of the peripheral things, I'm proud to say, and I mentioned this to a very dear friend of mine in Atlanta last week, who I really respect, David. And I said, you know, I'm very proud of myself, because one of the considerations that I put into this whole month, 40 days of thinking about this move, was radioactive fallout. And I actually went to the point of dragging out a flat map of the world and looking about how the geography is and looking at prevailing winds and prevailing steering currents. Now, honestly, in my consideration at that point, I thought it would come from all the DU that's been expended over in the Middle East, or possibly from a misguided strike on Iran by our friends the Israelis, or perhaps us, who knows. So anyway, that did figure into my thinking. So here, as this whole thing develops, and that is somewhat of a sense of urgency in many people's minds that are listening tonight, I would think, I looked at South America like a droplet of a jewel that drops down, and there's nothing else close to it. And if you look at the surrounding water, all the fronts move west to east, just like they do in the States, and all of those weather systems have to cross the total expanse of the Pacific. So radioactivity, a lot of it will drop out because it's a little bit heavier on the molecules of the isotopes or whatever scientifically they are, and a lot of it will go through rainstorms and get rained out. So Chile, actually, right to the west of us, gets the cleanest water and air in the world. And it's a heck of a place to live. I did have no idea that there was any place in the world left like this.
Well, let me interject something just for a moment. You had raised the issue of the potential of any radioactive fallout, whether it's caused by the Israelis or Americans or whatever the case may be. But then you also actually answered that question earlier when you brought up the Rockefellers and the Kissingers. Because they seem to have, let's face it, they're the controlling interests all over the world. They're the ones that, of course, Kissinger's an agent, but are they not, in fact, the controllers all over the world? They've got their economic finger everywhere, whether it's the manipulation of juntas or phony oil crises or whatever the case may be. Am I far off track here or what?
Well, I'll tell you what I tell people when I'm trying to educate them as to all this stuff, which I constantly do still, is I say any place that's got a privately held central bank is totally controlled by these people.
Absolutely.
It's as simple as that right there. Some of the other considerations that pressed my buttons were I'm a big skier. I learned to ski when I was a kid in Alaska. It's been a lifelong passion of mine. We've got world-class snow skiing 2 hours away. Just up the road about 7 hours is a little resort called Portillo, Chile, where all the non-motorized land speed records have been made. And by the way, I took a bus ride through there, and it is absolutely as spectacular spectacular a scene as I've ever seen. So that's close. Right up the road from me, 30 minutes, is the Little Grand Canyon of South America. Now, it's not like the Grand Canyon, but it certainly is majestic, and it makes our area a tremendously big tourist attraction, especially during the hot, humid, sultry summers in Buenos Aires.
Is this a rainforest-type area or what?
No, man. In fact, the slope close to us is called Los Llanos, which means no wood because there's no trees in the Andes like you're used to in mountains. So that and the fact that our little town, agriculture and tourism drive it, and the fact that there's five colleges here. So there's an awful lot of young people here when school's in. And I kind of, in a very general sense, have likened this little place to the way maybe Aspen or Durango or some of the Colorado towns were back in the 50s. Because I'm going to tell you, living here is like living in the States in the 50s. The only franchise stores here are at the airport are the rental car companies. There's not a Walmart. There's not a Target. There's not any of that garbage. And there's nothing but mom and pop little stores. And in many of those instances, the storefront is the front of their house and they live in the back. And it gives
this
place. The way
things used to be.
Well, it is exactly. And the two words, honestly, that I still tell people after living here 2.5 years are the first two words that hit me when I visited the first time. And that is charming and quaint. And I've never, ever found those not to be correct in all the time I've spent here. I honestly feel this is not my choice. I would tell you, as I would tell anybody, and I'm telling the world here tonight, I feel that I was guided here by God, okay? I just don't believe I could have found this on my own.
Yes.
So that
well, I know that after you went down there to visit and had come back up to Panama City, where you were living at the time, and I know you shared with me that your mother felt that she had never, ever seen you as happy and as much at peace in your life as you had been after that return from that first visit.
Well, let me tell you what I tell people, and you folks that are listening, you won't understand the full implication of this until sometime after next week when we get finished with some of these other programs. But since I learned the real true meaning of the words freedom and liberty, this is the freest I've ever felt in my life. Okay. And I would let me put a dot on that, is because most people, if you ask them what freedom and liberty is, they don't know. It's just words they shout around, because everybody in America says they're free, and man, it's the biggest slave country in the world. Okay. I mean, quite frankly. So if you want to go back to a legal definition, the best legal definition I've ever seen is from Blackstone's commentaries. This is common law stuff from England, and Blackstone's commentaries were the second most read book in the colonies behind the Bible. And Blackstone defined freedom and liberty as one word, and that is locomotion.
Locomotion. Stand by. We're going to go to a break. We'll be back with Roger Sales on a very, very interesting program.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days, 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed, without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information, 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
This is an important message from HempUSA.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit HempUSA.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid three times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
All day, and we're as tired as we can be. Welcome back to tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. Jeffrey Bennett here with my very special guest, Roger Sales, who's broadcasting with us internationally from Argentina tonight, live on this 24th day of March 2011. Originally, before I turn the mic back over to Roger, originally when I began to talk about this program earlier in the week, I had mentioned that this series of programs would span out over about a three-week time period once a week, and Roger and I have discussed it, and he feels it to be very important that we step this up and speed this up, because what's going to happen is if we go, you know, a week delay, you're going to lose the excitement, number one, and you're going to lose the understanding of it all, and therefore... tonight is Thursday. Friday is not a particularly great night to do this. Roger will be returning both this coming Monday and Tuesday to continue this. And you are going to learn much over the course of this three nights and very likely longer. I do invite our listeners tonight to begin to formulate questions that we can pose to Roger. I'm going to ask that you submit them to me through email through the Republic Trading Group International.com website. The email address is gold@republictradinggroupinternational.com, or you can send it to me at jeff@federalobserver.com, and I'll be able to share those with Roger. The reason we're not going to take calls during this, at least this first three-night scenario, is because it is too time-consumptive. It can be too distracting. So get us some questions first. We'll get them with Roger. He can deal with them accordingly. Now, let's get back to business. Roger Sales, the mic is yours, my friend.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Locomotion, and by that he means getting from point A to point B unimpeded. And if any of you up there have a driver's license, which I assume most of you do, if you look in Black's Law Dictionary under the word license, the definition in the legal dictionary, and this has got judicial notice, which that means anything in Black's goes straight into court, right into evidence, and bypasses the rule of evidence, all right? So Black's definition of the word license is permission to do that which is otherwise illegal. So if you think you're free and have liberty and you can go from point A to point B without a license, you're a free guy. And if you're not, you're not a free guy. And I don't care how you slice it and how you dice it. What it's come down to me over the years is this. Freedom is God's plan, and slavery is Satan's plan. I don't know if I've ever had anybody argue with that statement. I chose and found the way and was shown the way to true freedom, and I have gotten out of the system, and I literally beat the federal government of the United States, the most powerful government in the history of the world, politically, militarily, and financially, with five pieces of paper. Now, I've gotten with those five pieces of paper two now, U.S. passports as a U.S. national. I've gotten a Florida state identification card, which I carry with me to this day, as a non-resident, non-citizen of the United States. I got out. I know the audience is going to love this. I got completely legally, by their regulations, out of the IRS taxing system, and I've not heard from those people in 15 years. And I also recently, last fall, started receiving my Social Security, and I insisted that affidavit be filed with the application. If you're outside the country, you cannot file for Social Security without going through the embassy in your country, in the country where you live. And so I've had five tests of this. And every one of them, not even a peep from anybody. No objection, no problems, everything steamrolled straight ahead. And I will tell you that that replacement, that second passport, was a replacement because I had one stolen. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. And I had to go up and meet the embassy personnel in Mendoza City. And I got, for the first time, to hand that affidavit personally to a representative of the federal government and explain to her what it was. And it empowered me, man. It empowered me. Okay?
I remember when all that happened. And, of course, it's such a marvelous story. And that is what is going to begin to unfold here over the next few nights is letting people know that, you know what, you have choices that you've been told you do not have. That is the basic simplicity of it all, in my estimation.
It really is. You've been tricked and deceived, and Jeff was kind enough to put up on the website, and those of you who are listening, if you want to bombard and crash Jeff's website all at once, you can go drag that link up to the U.S. passport. Now, this is a reapplication, but they're all the same, and the things I'd drag your attention to, and we're just going to give a couple of points here so people know that I know what I'm talking about. At the bottom of page one of the instructions, there's a black box warning, and it says in bold letters, warning, false statements made knowingly and willfully in passport applications, including affidavits and other documents submitted to support this application, are punishable by yada yada, take your firstborn male child and neuter you. So it's interesting that they put that, and if you go by and get a hard copy at the post office, by the way, you'll see it right at the top of the paper hard form. So the next thing that you do is you come down to the first page of the actual application, and you see where you sign an oath. Now, you know, and I know, that they, when they take their oaths, they don't take them real seriously. But they darn sure expect you to take them real seriously when you sign one, such as at the one under a 1040 form where your signature is required. We're going to cover that next week, what it is and why that is. But let me read the oath here to you folks, okay? To the world, all right? I declare under penalty of perjury all of the following. One, I am a citizen or non-citizen national of the United States and have not, since acquiring U.S. citizenship or nationality, performed any of the acts listed under acts or conditions on the reverse side of this application, parentheses, unless explanatory statement is attached, close parentheses. Now, that is a super important sentence because, for one thing, first thing you see is there's two different statuses in our country. They probably didn't teach you that in civics, okay? And the second thing is that those two are mutually exclusive, to use an old new math term, because it says a non-citizen national. So they can't be the same thing, and they're totally different. The third point I want to make is the parentheses that I added. And it said, unless explanatory statement is attached. Why did they put the statement at the top of the form telling you you could include affidavits or other documentation, and why didn't they put it in the oath right here in the, just like they did following, where they want you to declare other stuff? So you see the trickery already, okay? Are you with me? Am I explaining this, Jeffrey?
You're doing great, man. Okay. I'm learning as you go, man. I told you. That's why I don't speak too much.
I'm going to tell you people one ironclad truth. You either get your rights from nature and nature's God, or you get your rights from man. And when you get your rights from man, they may call them rights, i.e. civil rights, but they're actually privileges. And when man gives you privileges, man can change them or he can take them away. So the question you ask yourself is, where do my rights come from, and what kind of rights are those?
And now, what we're going to be talking about next week is exactly how to begin taking control of your life, correct?
Well, the first thing you got to do is you got to understand it, because you just do this systematically. You've got to make this part of you, because you're the one that's got to declare this, and you're the one that's got to live with that and defend your decision, okay? So unless you make this information your own, then you're not going to have a real good time with it, because they're going to try and browbeat you at every turn to get you back in the slave pen. Now, the other thing, and I'm going to leave next week after this one little thing here, but I want to read this. This is one of the books I stumbled on early, was back before the internet, was a book called The Collective Speeches of William T. McFadden. Many of you know who Mr. McFadden was, one of the greatest statesmen really our country's ever produced. He was head of the banking committee for 15 or more years, from the late teens up until they assassinated him by poison. Finally, they got him on the third try. And he made some absolutely fiery speeches on the House of Representatives floor. And this was a book that was accumulation of 31 of those speeches between the years 1931 and 1934. And I want to tell you, talk about deja vu. You can read that book, and everything that's going on today was exactly the same thing they did in the 30s. In the 30s, they didn't use China, they used Russia. In the 30s, they didn't use Walmart, they used a company in England named Marks and Spencer, which is still around today. And he covers all that in these various speeches. But I'm going to read you this one little part here, and it takes just a little bit because I want you to get the whole background. I think Jeff's got this posted up there, but if not, I want to read it for a minute. And it says, this is from Friday, June the 15th of 1934, Congressman McFadden. And it says, Felix Frankfurter's adept student and protege, Jerome N. Frank, General Counsel of the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, delivered an address before the Association of American Law Schools 31st Annual Meeting at Chicago, December the 30th, 1933, on experimental jurisprudence and the New Deal. That was the title of the speech. A reading of the address shows the contempt of the Frankfurter lawyers for the Constitution of the land and an express determination to obviate and avoid constitutional barriers in their administration of the nation's affairs. Those in charge of the plan and its administration in the United States have for years considered methods of accomplishing their ends without regard for the Constitution of the United States. They recognize the fact that the National Industrial Recovery Act did not give them all the power they desired in order to break down the barriers enacted in our Constitution, preserving certain rights for the various states of the Union as well as other features. Therefore, in the promulgation of the various codes affecting industry and agriculture throughout the country, they have sought to compel, to browbeat, and bulldoze the business interests of this country to engage in private contract, so that they would have the power to require the business interests of the nation to do their wishes regardless of the Constitution. Okay, I want everybody to get big ears right here. The New Deal lawyers now have no hesitancy in appearing in court and asserting that private citizens can contract away their constitutional rights. It has been through this method that they have broken down state lines and invaded the most private affairs of our citizens. It will be through this method, for instance, that the little retailer in the country will be driven out of business and chain store system control by them put into operation, just as they are attempting in England. Hello?
Nothing changes. It just continues on, doesn't it?
I may read that sentence again.
Yeah.
The New Deal lawyers now have no hesitancy in appearing in court and asserting that private citizens can contract away their constitutional rights. Folks, that's what's happened to you. You have no idea how. And we're going to talk about that in great detail.
It's amazing. As you recall, on the original Federal Observer, I had a segment we had built called Words That Men Live By, which I think at one time was called Great American Speeches, but because I began to incorporate the writings and the words of personages from all walks of life, from around the world, that dealt with the big brother and the intrigue and the conspiracies, or in effect the growth of this nation going back to the 1600s. And unfortunately, it's not easy for readers to get to the old Federal Observer archives unless they know how to do it. And I've gone over there, and I have probably one of McFadden's most reported on speeches, which he had given in, I believe, May of 1934, dealing with the Federal Reserve, which he referred to openly as a corrupt institution. I know that that speech is in that book you've got. It is probably used and misused by an awful lot of people. The man was amazing. Very few people realize he was elected by both Democrat and Republican tickets at various times in his political career, which made him no accusation of partisanship could ever take place. The guy was amazing.
I was so impressed when I read and found out about him and read some of his speeches that I went back and did some research on him. And one of the things that struck me, I've never heard about anybody else. The last time he ran for the House of Representatives, he was from Pennsylvania. I'm not sure where his district was. But the last time he ran before they murdered him, he was nominated to run by the Democrats, the Republicans, and the populists.
Yep.
All three parties nominated the same guy. I've never heard of that anywhere else with anyone. Okay.
Never.
So
never.
It really gives you an idea as to what kind of a man he was.
You refer to him as a statesman. I mean, that's something we just don't have anymore. We've not had a statesman in office that I can think of in my lifetime.
Well, the closest one is Ron Paul. We've had a few. Wright Patman was a tremendous guy against the Federal Reserve. Jerry Voorhees, the guy that defeated Jerry Voorhees, by the way, was an upstart young guy named Richard Nixon, financed by the Rockefellers. A guy named Gonzalez, Henry Gonzalez from Texas, who was a great guy. And the one we've got now really is Ron Paul, and I hope his son will follow in his footsteps. One of the old nursery rhymes that I turned around, because all this knowledge, Jeff, is sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And I kind of changed it a little bit. I said sticks and stones can break my bones and words can just enslave me, because that's how they've done it. The other one I like to use is you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him think. And boy, everybody listening's had that experience if you've
Absolutely.
Tried to turn some of these nitwits onto what's going on and you can't get them out in front of the TV. So anyway, those are a couple of things. We're going to cover all that stuff much more in detail next week. I'd like to get on and talk with the time we have left a little bit more about Argentina and cover some of these high points and the differences, because if you come down here, it looks very similar to where we come from in many respects, but there's a lot of differences, and I wanted to cover just a few of them because I think they're interesting. And when people meet you here, they kiss. They don't kiss on the lips, but they give you kind of a European kiss on the cheek, and you hug a lot. And if you go into a room, it doesn't matter if you know everybody there. Like, I go to tango lessons a number of nights a week, which I love, by the way. And you go in, you go up to everybody in the room, you hug them, and you kiss them on each cheek and say hola. That's hello, okay? Buenas noches, how are you this evening? And when you leave the room, you go by and greet everybody in the room, and you give them a hug, and you kiss them on the cheek. And the reason that I tell you that is because it adds an openness and a warmth and a friendliness to this society and the culture, which is far better than the one I came from, okay? I mean, honestly, I got to be honest with you. This culture here is far superior to the culture I was born in and grew up in, okay? So that's one important thing that I thought was interesting. Actually, people think Argentina as South America, and if you ask an Argentinian, they'll get a little bit offended, and they say that we're not South American, we're European. And they have that attitude, and that's a reason a lot of other countries around the continent don't particularly like Argentinians. And I've had people tell me recently, especially in the last 10 years with what's gone on over there, that Argentina's more European than Europe these days.
Wow.
It's a charming, charming place to live. Here to give you an example of the way they do things different. You know, you're going down a highway and you want to make a left turn, right? In the States, you put on your left turn blinker and you wait and you hold up all the other cars behind you until an opening comes and you turn left, right? Here, they teach you to turn off on the side of the road on the right and you wait until both lanes are cleared and then you turn left across both lanes. Is it better? I don't know. But it's different, and it makes sense, okay? The siesta custom, which I'm gonna expound on just a minute, because I had the idea watching my neighbors across the street at the last house I lived in, as I watched them at 1 o'clock every day, 365 days a year, the entire family comes home and they eat lunch together as a family. Now, they don't necessarily spend that 4 hours together. Some of them may go exercise. Some of them may go sleep. Some of them may go read. Some of them may do what? Well, some of them may do whatever, okay? I kind of think there's probably a lot of this population is conceived in siesta myself. but regardless, the point I wanted to make is this. It forms a family bond here that I'm going to tell you is totally unbreakable by the New World Order. And that's their first order of business, is to demolish the family, because then they can corrupt the society.
Boy, if they done that, it in this country.
That will never happen here. Never. Okay? So as I came to that realization and thought that through, it just gave me more insight into the culture here. The banks, and you're going to love this, the banks and all the government offices close at 1 o'clock every day for siesta, and they don't reopen. Okay, so all the government offices and all the banks are closed. They're only open half a day.
Which is great, because that means they can only cause damage half the day, unlike
well,
over here where they seem to run 24 hours a day anymore.
There are certainly a lot of validity to that. When you go into a store here and you go to buy something, you know, you go in a store in the U.S. and you go to a clerk and you go, I want that. And she goes, okay, great. And she gets you one and she rings it up and you walk with your good out in the store. Here, you go into the store and somebody waits on you and says, what do you want? And I want one of those. And so then they write you a ticket and you have to go over to another line where you pay. And if you're on credit, you stand in line. If you pay cash, they put you in the front of the line, they give you another ticket, then you go to another window with your pay ticket, and they have to go in the back and give you your good. So you got to go through three different steps to go buy something. And even I'm helping market some property, and we had to go get a plat of this property. So we went to the office where you get blueprints and stuff of properties, and you know it's only open till 1. And the guy goes, yeah, here it is. And he brings it out, and he says, that'll be 6 pesos. And he writes you a little receipt, but you can't pay him. You have to go stand in line at the Banco Nacional de Argentina, which is the country's bank. And sometimes those lines are 150 people because they're only open half a day. And you got to go stand in line to go pay 6 pesos, which is about 75 cents, to go get these plans so you can market a $200,000 piece of property. So what my attorney had to do finally after 3 days was he sent his secretary over there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and she got in the front of the line and paid her 6 pesos, and we got our plat. So that I'm just trying to give you some of the differences on the way they do things.
Some of that's pretty much of a drawback. I cannot see the purpose of that. But guess what? It's custom. It's what they do. And sometimes you say, you know what, I think I can live with that to get away from the insanity of what's going on here. You talk about, you know, the bond in the families, because the families spend time together. They eat, they dine, they go to church, they siesta or whatever together. When over here, we're running in 18 different directions because I want McDonald's, this one wants Burger King, this one wants Domino's, but by the time the day is over, we're all going back to our own private bedrooms so we can play video games or watch whatever trash on TV we want to watch. There is no unity in this country and family any longer. That is the point you made. That is how the New World Order wins. If you want to beat them, you want to drive a stake through their heart, you're going to need to tune in again next week to get parts two and three of this presentation. And you don't want to miss it.
The people have a lackadaisical attitude. It's an easy attitude. There's no big hurry. You know, somebody will say, well, I'm going to meet you at 5 o'clock. Well, hell, they may not show up till 5:30 or 6 or 7 and they won't call to tell you they're late, or they may not even show up at all and they'll never call you. Okay. So those are some of the things that, you know, drive Americans nuts down here. All right. Really. Cause you know how we are, right? I wanted to touch on, and man, does this hour go fast? I wanted to touch on the economy of scale. I got my little Social Security, all that money they stole all those years, which I'm glad they did, because I would have squandered it, and now it saved me a lot. It's a measly $804 a month. That sure wouldn't go far in the States, but that translates out to about 3,150 pesos here. Now, my rent, I live in a nice little apartment. It's not in the best part of town. It's not small. It's not large. It's very livable. All of my utilities are included except gas, and I use propane to cook and heat with in the winter, and my rent just went up 200 pesos from 700 pesos to 900. So that's about $225 a month.
Well, we're going to have to save a couple of those pesos for the next phone call, buddy. We are out of time. Roger Sales, thanks for sharing these great stories. The groundwork has been laid. Ladies and gentlemen, do not miss it. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Lord willing. Roger will be back with us next Monday and Tuesday, and for whatever the good Lord has in mind for both of us. Take care, my friend. I'll be with you shortly.
Thank you, my friend. Thank everybody for listening.
Nobody has, and I got you.
The next round of the worst